From the front line.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgates. Representing KTYR and its stakeholders. We are the Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, we're on the phone for the Fans Bleed Blue Show, the Ring Podcast with Ranger Proud. Oh, Canada episode. Two-thirds of the trip with the Canadians. The Maple Leafs got the Ottawa Senators later this weekend. But in between all that, next game in Tennessee versus the Predators. But that's an interesting, different type of road trip. You know, you go to Montreal on Saturday. Then, yeah, that makes sense, you know, Saturday in Montreal. Then you go to Ontario for Toronto on Monday. And then you fly to Nashville and then go back to Canada. Interesting, border crossings type situations. I think this is a positive road trip, get two more points, and this is a really good start to the season if we could make up the ground from losing to the Capitals and the Stars. Let's talk about it. Let's get the guys on, man. Shesterkin was a hero on Monday night, and I'm sure the guys are ecstatic. Let's bring them on, Ranger Proud, Rick Podcast with Ranger Proud, of course, Forever Blue Shorts and Empire Sports Media. Then we'll get to Glenn, and we'll get to the traveling man himself, Mr. Captain America, Scotty, man. RP, what's up, man? How you doing, man? How's everything?
Everything's good, Steve. How's it going tonight?
I'm good, man. After last night, that was fantastic. That was fun to watch. We'll talk about that, though, man. I loved it, man. I loved it a lot. But, we'll get everybody on. We'll talk, man. Let's see. Is this? I forget which one it is. Is this Glenn?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Glenn, what's up, man? How you doing, man?
Hey, good. How are you guys doing tonight? We should all be in a good mood after the last couple of games, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty good, man. Real good. I was actually watching a little bit of that Islander Blackhawk game, and they, you know, showed the respects to Tony Esposito, and interesting first period, Blackhawks controlling that game, and then there was the Florida-Tampa Bay game I was kind of keeping tabs on. But we'll get to that later on around the NHL. And, of course, Mr. Captain America himself, we got to give homage, pay homage. Thank you for bringing us our first win of the season, Scotty, out there, man. You got to tell us about your trip to Montreal, man.
Yes, 17 COVID tests in 48 hours and two flights later, here I am. yeah, that was a good time, man. As you know, Steve, I've been there. This was my 11th game, 11th Ranger game there. But the atmosphere was insane. I mean, it's always crazy up there. But you know, I've been to a one playoff game in 2017 that was just, I've never seen anything like that before, and this was definitely comparable. I mean, they're coming off of finals, home opener. Original six, all that good stuff, not to mention they didn't have fans at all last year up until I think the finals. They let 1,000 in, so they were salivating to be back in that building, and it was an incredible, from a, you know, just from a hockey fan perspective, it was an incredible atmosphere in there, and even nicer to spoil it.
Now, before we get to RP and then go down to Glenn, tell us, like, if you could give us a summary, man, like, you know, you got there. You know, I know I saw that you went out to eat, you went to the bars, man. Give us a summary of the trip, man. Like, you know, how was the sports scene out there in Montreal these days, man, up there and in Quebec?
Well, you know, what's funny is that we went out, me and I got my buddy Patrick, who lives up there, is a Habs fan, obviously. So we went out. That sandwich picture you saw, that was from Schwartz's. It's a really famous, very old, very famous Hebrew deli, and they have they're famous for their smoked meat up there. It's basically brisket, but they just the way it's prepared, slow cooked in like a honey, whatever that is. It's just a really, really good sandwich that they have up there. So we always make it a point to get there. And then we went out Friday night, Thursday night, when the Rangers were playing, Dallas and Montreal was playing. So we went out to a sports bar called La Casa Sports. I'm, you know, forgive the lack of French accent there, but it's attached to the Bell Center, and they have the NHL package. We walk in there. I want to watch my game. He wants to watch his game. Literally every single TV has the Habs game on, with sound, obviously. I asked, we sat at the bar. It wasn't the first place we went to either. We couldn't find a place without the NHL package, so they did. So we go in there around the third period. Literally every single TV's got the Habs game on. And I asked, actually my friend Patrick asked the guy in French if he could put one TV, just one, on the Ranger game. And he looks at me and just smiles and says no. Cool. Mind you, at the time, the Habs had just gone down 5-1 in the third period, and we were 2-2 in the third. Would not give me one TV off the Habs game. So that pretty much sums up the sports atmosphere up there. As he, the direct quote, my friend Patrick, he said, they're not hockey fans up there. They're Habs fans, period. Mm-hmm. But no, it was a good time, though. Yeah, I had a bunch of COVID tests. I had to get three, and literally three in a 48-hour span to get up and get back. But, you know, all that aside, it is what it is. And, you know, didn't really dampen the time. They had full capacity. It was a great time.
Last question for me, and then if RP and Glenn have anything for you when they speak. How was, you know, getting the win, leaving that building after the insurance goal? How was it like walking out of the Bell Center this time around?
It was a lot easier than in that play. Well, the playoff game, they lost. The Rangers lost in overtime. But no, it was fine. It was fine. You know, as fired up as the fans were to start the game and during the game and whatnot, it wasn't hostile, if that's what you're asking. You know, it wasn't like walking out of there, you know, in Philly beating them. But, you know, I think they realized it was just, you know, regular season game and whatnot. I think had the Rangers won the game I was at in the playoffs, I think it would have been a little more of a hostile atmosphere getting out of there. But, no, it was fine. Everybody's at the end, they're all – most of them are, you know, legit hockey fans.
All right, cool. All right, let's jump right into it. RP, what's your thoughts, man? You know, I'm very good at it. If we get another one on this road trip, this is a successful road trip, whether it's the Nashville game or the Ottawa game. I think it's kind of weird. You go to two games to Canada, then you got to fly all the way down to Tennessee just to go all the way back up to Ottawa, whatever. Weird. But this is the way I take out of this thus far. The Montreal game is really the way the Rangers retaliated after Montreal tying the game Scott was at, especially the dunk, the lead, the chase with Zibanejad, the Lafreniere, to get the lead back literally 25 seconds later. But I didn't see, like, a lot of Ranger fans on the Toronto game, RP. I didn't feel like we were in danger. I know Toronto put a lot of pressure. I felt comfortable. It felt totally different than when Gorgiev was in net versus the Capitals. I thought we were going to win the game anyway, and we did in OT. So what's your thoughts, RP?
Well, I think you felt comfortable because Shesterkin was playing on his head. I always say a goalie has to steal 5-6 games in an NHL season to really get your team into the playoffs, and that was the first one this season, and that's why you felt comfortable. Watching the game was frustrating as hell. I mean, they went several minutes without getting a shot on goal. It was weird because in the Dallas game or at the home opener, at like the halfway mark of that game, the Rangers realized, heck, if we drive to the net and shoot, we can get shots on goal. And then they really picked up their play, and that turned into a really good hockey game. Even though they lost in overtime, it was a good hockey game. Then you go to the Toronto game, and they started the same crap again. So it wasn't for Shesterkin, the Rangers probably get blown out in that hockey game. On the flip side to it, it was probably one of the best overtime sequences I've seen in years. That 2 minutes and 44 seconds of end-to-end with both goalies were just incredible. Was great hockey, and of course, you know, you got the cherry on a Sunday on top there when you win it in overtime. So there were a lot of good things, but you know, they really sucked on faceoffs, guys. I mean, let's be honest, they were horrible on faceoffs in Toronto. You can't have games like that. You know, the winning goal, the manager didn't even try to pull the puck back because he couldn't do it all night. He pushed the puck forward and got it onto Panarin's stick, and he scored. They really need to figure this face-off fiasco out. Because every year it gets worse and worse, and you can't have games like you had in Toronto at the Circles. And the flip side, it goes to defense. They played well, but they did give up a lot of scoring opportunities. They had a lot of grade-A scoring chances against Shesterkin, and he played very, very well. And that's great for the Rangers for the season because he's the number one, and you want to see him playing a lot of hockey games. You want to see him comfortable in the net, and I think he's playing. He's already getting to that level. But as a team, they have to find a way to take control of games early and keep pressure on him. I know we had Strome and Kako out, so there's a little bit of imbalance there. But, you know, after a while, you just can't have excuses. Just go out there and play your game every day and make it work. So they need to build off of a lot of mistakes. But like you said, Steve, they're having a good road trip. You know, you've gotten, what is it, 3 out of the last 4 points, an overtime loss and a win. These little streaks start to build up. While Fournier has a lot of confidence, Zibanejad's getting points, Kreider's getting points, Panarin's getting points. So things are happening. Adam Fox is just a freaking lights out defenseman. The home opener was the first time I got to see him live, and he's worth every dime of that ticket. He's playing very, very well.
All right, cool. Shout out to RP. Glenn, what's your thoughts, man?
Yeah, I mean, I think this team has played, 8 good periods in a row. In fact, I know RP was at the Dallas game, and they really played very well the second and third period, and I was wondering if he might have gone down to the locker room between the first and the second and gave him a little pep talk or kicked a little butt or something, because
they probably heard him yelling from the stands, trust me.
While I'm watching the game, I'm thinking RP must have gone down there between periods and pepped him up a little bit. It's very encouraging, especially with, Kako out and with Strome out. Galant has had to work the lines a little bit. And, I think everybody who's come in has done a good job filling in. It certainly helped that Shesterkin was incredible for the 2 games in Canada. So that's a very, very encouraging sign. But for the most part, I mean, I think you got to be happy. You go to Montreal and Toronto, 2 places that historically are tough for this team to win at, and come away with 4 points. That's a real good job, I think, considering, uh-huh. Where we are at this point in the season, getting used to the new system and everything. So, I'd like to see a little bit more scoring, but, guys have been in and out of the lineup. Face-offs, again, are a problem. But I think for the most part, it's encouraging what we've seen, the last 3 games, and hopefully they can keep it up.
And Scott, how do we solve the face-off problems, man? We've been talking about that all last year, man. But your thoughts on this road trip, too, as well.
Glenn pretty much said it all. You go to 2 hostile, very hostile places that they historically don't play well in Montreal and Toronto, and you come out with 4 points. It doesn't matter how you got those 4 points. They've exposed some weaknesses face-off. They were, you can't get dominated in shots like Toronto did. But the name, at the end of the day, you get those 4 points. We got a coach like Gallant that we have faith in that'll – They're obviously aware that there's a lot to build on, but this is a brand new team, young. They're still finding their sea legs, and I think they're going to get a little better as we go. But get those points as you go, and I think Igor doing what he did in the last two games is so important because. We drafted him. We saw what he was doing in the KHL and even a little bit in the AHL. And, he's supposed to be the heir to the throne. He's supposed to be next, 15 years from now. Or, we drafted him thinking that, hoping that 15 years from now, 31 is going right up in the rafters next to 35-1. Rookie season, sophomore slump, fine, especially with the COVID and all that and the lack of training camp. So, but now he's on the clock, and so to see what he did in the last 2 days is just so encouraging to see, because now it's time to we're gonna know this year whether he is the heir to the throne, and again, it's only 2 games, but it's a very, very encouraging game. He was Lundqvist in his prime, and he was Richter in his prime against Toronto, so very good to see. Let me add one more thing about the Montreal game. I was wearing the Chris Nyland jersey for the 3rd time, and the Knuckles is now a perfect 3-0 in that building. And let me tell you, they love that. I get a lot of compliments up there. You know, we old folks know, you know, he was a Ranger bruiser for a couple years here, nothing more. But he's a legend. He's an absolute legend up there. So I get a lot of compliments, you know. It's a lot better than wearing Kreider up there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's, I guess that's another reason why I got out of there safely, because I got a lot of respect for that jersey. Definitely Igor. Very, and I want to point out, you know who impressed me in the last two games? Ryan Reeves. You know, he's proving that we did not get him, you know, as a deterrent to Tom Wilson. He's a lot more than that. Now, he took a stupid penalty early in the Montreal game, and I don't know what Gallant said to him, but, you know, I don't know if he missed a shift or whatnot, what his penalty was. But he was out there the rest of the game. I mean, he was getting ice time to the point where it was noticeable. And he was, you know, he drew a power play later, and he was on the ice with a minute to go in that game. And I remember remarking to my buddy, I said, "What the hell is Ryan Reeves doing out there?" And, you know, there you go. And he caused the turnover in the Toronto game that led to the Zibanejad goal. I mean, you know, he's a lot more, or at least he's really trying to very, very hard to prove that he's a lot more than just an answer to Tom Wilson and just a goon, because he's racking up a lot of, I meant to look it up before. I mean, I thought about this afternoon. I wanted to look up the ice time for the two games, but it's got to be substantial for someone, you know, who is what we thought, you know, somebody like that was brought in for. But he's becoming, you know, he's noticeably, you know, I don't know if I'm the only one who noticed it, but I, you know, he's all over the place and racking up a lot of ice time. So, you know, I don't know what Gallant said to him after that penalty, but, you know, he's been a saint ever since and really doing good things out there. So, you know, that's encouraging to see, but, yeah, faceoffs, you know, Steve, you asked me what to do. I mean, you know, we were going in that we solved the toughness problem. We the defense is on its way. But we knew going in that a second line center was still a problem. And, you know, I was hoping that the plethora of third and fourth line centers we have, somebody would just naturally fill in. But faceoff is at the problem, and that's going to be a problem. I don't know. I mean, we need another center. That's really all I can tell you, unless somebody just magically learns how to become a face-off whiz in the next couple weeks. Other than that, I think we need to make a trade for a center.
Yeah, we need to keep tabs of that over the next week. And then when we be back next Tuesday night to discuss after the games versus Nashville, Ottawa, Calgary. So it's still a little bit early, but it's not a good sign. But if you could win the big – I mean, not every face-off is the same. You want to, like you said, win over 50% of them, but you have to win the key ones like they kind of did. Like you said, RP, as far as he pulled back his stick, whatever reason, got Panarin the shot on goal to win. But that's not going to be likely in most cases. It just, you know, it fell in our laps. Now, let me say this about Ryan Reeves, and I want to add on to that, Scott, and then we go back to RP. I like the fact – I don't remember – it was the second period going into the third period where he was barking at Maple Leaf fans, and I think that's what this team needed, man, a little bit of attitude, man. Montreal game, I didn't really see a lot of physicality, but I definitely saw it in that Maple Leaf game. I saw a lot of that from him, Goodrow, and even Keandre Miller was putting a little bit of hits on in the game last night. I like this two-way hockey. It's slowing it down. Toronto wants to play an up and down game, and that's why you saw what you saw. And they kind of mentioned that. I was thinking, like, man, they're playing a really a bend versus break type of up and down pattern versus the Maple Leafs. And I think even Lundqvist made it a point about that during the intermission. I said, yeah, and I saw the same thing, but it worked. They played behind Shesterkin, and they listen. You know what? We're going. The saves are coming, the shots are coming your way, and a lot of them were too clean for me, but the rebound saves by Shesterkin is amazing. I think they said the statistic, like, he was like one of the top analytically goalies off of rebounds, like, you know rebound shots, he's one of the best. And this is the, I wouldn't even say this is the version of Shesterkin I was expecting, but I expected kind of like a very strong performance out of him last year, but, you know, we got to give room for COVID and what happened with Zibanejad, guys like that. coming off of COVID and how that dynamic getting the season late, 55 games. I think Shesterkin is ready, man. I didn't think he was going to be like this. I don't know if he can keep it up like this, but this is encouraging to me, RP. What's your thoughts? Anything else you'd like to add? Ryan Reeves, anybody else, so on and so forth.
Well, in the Montreal game, if I'm correct, it wasn't just Reeves on the ice at the end. He had the fourth line out with like a minute and 30 to go in a one-goal game. That was the Montreal game. So, and he, same thing in Toronto. He's playing his fourth line like a shutdown line. And we haven't seen this in a couple of years. But for the Rangers, especially that line, which was pretty good, I know in the Toronto game it was McKay, Hunt, and Reeves was the fourth line of that game. And I like the way they played. Didn't get a lot of minutes when they were out there. They were productive. They kept the other team off the score sheet, which was the most important, and gave the rest of the guys a little bit of breathing room. I don't think we're able to trade for a really good center. I think everybody in the league knows the Rangers need a really good center. Unless they package in somebody to get something good. This is what it's got to be. These guys got to learn how to pick a draw. And these centers are supposedly doing it since Pee Wee Hockey. And the Rangers are 30th in the NHL right now. I mean, the Seattle Kraken have a better percentage win on the draw than we do. And only Ottawa and I think New Jersey are behind us. Ottawa and Vancouver, excuse me, are behind us. It's a bad, bad scene, and it's going to cost them wins. It's going to cost them goals. They have to figure this out. Other than that, we can talk about how I've been getting ripped on the Kravtsov story I wrote today. That's been pretty interesting.
Uh-oh, what happened?
Fans
were coming at you because of what you said about Kravtsov?
Oh, yeah, it was a fun day yesterday. Yeah, you either love what I had to say or hate it, but it was all over the place. I've been fighting with fans left and right.
About Drury?
That was my page, or that was Anthony about the thing with Drury supposedly telling him that he quit on the team. I wrote the story yesterday for Forever Blue Shirts, how the Rangers need to get rid of Kravtsov, using some other of those examples. I just felt like he's quit on the team twice in 2 years. And the gist of the story was, when you're getting paid by the Rangers and you're playing up in preseason, everybody's hunky-dory and rosy, and then when you get sent down, I want to be traded, I don't want to play for the Rangers anymore, I'm not reporting to the AHL, and then I go back to Russia. To me, that's quitting, and he did the same thing last time. Think about it. He'd be up right now.
Mm-hmm.
Conditioning problems or not, without Kako and Strom, Kravtsov was the next guy up. Without a doubt. Instead, he's in Russia watching KHL hockey waiting for a trade. Well, then trade him. I think the drama is just getting a little too much. And I'm sorry. He hasn't proven that he can play. So I wrote that. And then you hear, well, he only gets 3 or 4 or 5 minutes a game. How does he expect to do anything? But I just expect him to do his job in those 3 or 4 or 5 minutes a game. Don't be beat to the side. Don't make the stupid passes across the middle. Score when you get the scoring opportunities. It's not... You have to earn your time in the NHL. Nothing is given. Just because you're a first-round draft pick doesn't mean that you're going to make the team. And, the Rangers had a problem with Anderson and definitely having a trouble with Kravtsov. So I sort of just expressed it in a little bit of a one-sided view. But to me as a fan and to me as someone who writes about the Rangers and wants to see them succeed, he quit on them twice. JD saved his ass last year when he got demoted from the KHL to that Siberian league, and they brought him back to Hartford. And then he thought he was going to be traded and wasn't. And then he played in the preseason and thought he was going to make the team, and he did it. And check this out, guys. Last year, JD, Gorton, and David Quinn were pretty much on the same page, and he needed to be sent down. This year, they're all gone, right? So now Drury, I'm sure, going to save them. And Gallant all thought he wasn't ready and sent them down. So why do you think the player is the one that's getting screwed? To me, the Rangers are getting screwed. We need this guy to play his A game. We need his skill in the lineup. But he hasn't been ready to do it. He hasn't shown he wants to do it. And now he just thinks he can call for a trade. Heck, I made him sit in Russia. Because the Rangers are the best they're going to get as a second-round draft pick out of him. Same thing they did with Elias Anderson. Because everybody knows it's not working out here and he wants out. And the Rangers want to get rid of the drama. I don't think they should give up on him. I don't think you give him away is actually what I'm saying. So that was yesterday's fun. Had some great views, Steve. I was top on Google all day, so I was happy as a kid in the candy store. But my Twitter account was lighting up with some very unusual wording. And
I saw the notifications.
Well, you know, some people just feel that it's the Rangers organization's fault he's in the spot. Personally, I think it's both sides' fault. But when you sign an NHL contract, you go where they tell you to play. And I know that sucks, but that's just how it is. If everybody wants to play in the NHL, you know, I understand that. I understand it more than people understand. A friend of a friend plays in a doubles organization, and you can't tell me he didn't want to be in New Jersey playing tonight against the Kraken, but he got sent down to Utica. Did he huff and puff? No, he's making his money. He's going down trying to get his way back. Isn't that what happens when you sign an NHL contract? You go where they tell you. So I actually used the word one time, guys, you're going to love this really quick. I said that Krastov was the property of the New York Rangers. This is true, right, guys? When we're talking about contracts, you are that organization's property. They can move where you want. Someone took that and said, well, how can you say he's the property? He's not a slave. Where the hell did that come from? So then I got into that conversation, which I should have walked away from. I should have known better. But that's not what I was saying. Not even in the least. Not when you sign a contract in football and in any sport. When you sign a contract to work for the Navy, you're their property. You got to go and do where they tell you and perform where they want you to perform. That's all I was trying to say. Is that if they tell him to go down, you can't keep saying I'm not reporting or report him and quit in 3 weeks. How do you create a guy that quit on your team 2 times in 2 years and went back to Russia? It's so hard to move him now. He knows what he's doing. He's looking to get away. He said he'd play in the AHL for another organization, but not the Rangers. I don't know what you do with him now. Now it's a definite loss on our column. You're never going to get a first-round draft pick back. So that's all I was expressing. But I was just tired of seeing a guy who has all that skill not reach its potential and quit.
RP, can he play in Russia, or can he not even play in Russia?
I was
to show off his skill a little bit.
I was told he had a European opt-out clause. I do not know if that means he can play in the KHL or not. But look, when he went down to the KHL last year before the shortened season with COVID and all, he played so bad that they sent him down to their minor league system.
Right.
So, I don't know if he thinks he's a better player than he is or if he just hasn't been able to display what he wants. And maybe, just maybe, both sides need to separate from one another. But you can't do it like this because by walking away, you devalued yourself and you devalued the Rangers. So I don't know how you go about trading him if he's sitting in Russia skating and watching KHL games. I don't know where they go, but I don't know if he's allowed to play, that he used the opt-out clause, because now the KHL and the NHL have agreements, and unfortunately I don't know exactly what they are, so I don't want to speculate that he can or can't. I don't think that benefits him at this point either.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's always that same deal. I'm going to KHL, now I'm playing on bigger hockey rinks, it's a different service, and I come back to North America. His conditioning is probably off. So there's so many factors, but I also know it's probably – I heard there are 5 teams that are interested in him. I don't know what those 5 teams are, who they are, and what they're offering back. But everything I've read, it's only been a second-round pick. You're not going to get a second-round pick and a current NHL player. For a guy that's only played 20 games in the NHL with 2 goals and 4 points. And I'm not knocking that. That's what he did, and when he was there, he was utilized. But you can't just keep walking away when you get demoted. There's a reason why they're sending you down. And it's not because Chris Drury doesn't like him. And it's not because Chris Drury wasn't happy when the Rangers drafted him. Because right now, this is what Chris Drury's inherited. And if he wanted to move him, you want to move him when he's playing his A game and you get the most for him. Not
right.
The situation that they're in now. So that excuse doesn't fly. I don't care if he embarrassed them and said he was quitting on the team in front of the Harper Wolfpack locker room. He's the GM. He could say whatever he wants. Not everybody, this whole world is in good shoes over here. Sometimes you got to be blunt, and that's how it is, and maybe that makes you play better. I mean, I use guys, I know I'm going on and on, but I use Fiedel as the example. Tito begged the Rangers not to send him back to the Czech Republic. He begged them, send me to the AHL so I can learn North American hockey and get better. He sent it to second line last night. He's done everything that they wanted, and his hard work has made him a really good hockey player. Krafcov could be doing the same thing, and he probably has a little bit more skill than Tito, but he just keeps falling on a sword and quitting, and it's just very annoying, and I don't think that they can coexist anymore.
Yeah, no, it seems like he just wants out of the organization. And, I mean, the only reason I was asking was because if he did play in Russia and played well, maybe he could lift his value a little bit. But besides screwing the Rangers, he screwed himself because, as you said, he's so devalued now that, you know, the Rangers have a choice of getting hardly anything for him or just letting him sit in Russia. So they don't have any urgency right now to move him. So, you know, I mean, I know he's a 21-year-old kid, but, you know, and a lot of 21-year-old kids seem to have an attitude problem that they maybe grow out of. But, you know, right now I think he's getting really bad advice from his agent. The Rangers have no urgency to move him. So he's going to wind up losing a year of his career.
And he fired his agent. This is his second agent.
Oh,
he fired his agent from the last time around. Yeah, he moved on, and it's just, you know, he just feels
yeah, I don't see how he could come into that locker room again. I mean, I don't know what a lot of the players think, but they're probably kind of, you know, fed up with him or upset with him because they're working hard, and if there's an attitude problem and that's why he's, you know, he didn't make the team, then, you know, a lot of these guys are going to be around for a while. So I'm not sure that he can come back to that locker room at this point. So it's just probably going to be a stalemate for most of the year. And it's unfortunate because I, from seeing him play, the kid does have skill. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, but sometimes you have to play, you know, fourth line just to get some minutes and prove it to the coach. I mean, I if I remember correctly, I think Kako spent some time on the fourth line. Lots of these guys spend some time down there, and then right, and then they show the coach, and they earn more ice time, and they earn getting promoted to another line, and it just seems like he wanted all or nothing, and it's unfortunate because I think he's got talent and is being wasted right now.
I agree.
All right, right. Hey Scott, you want anything to add about the Krafcov before I give my 2 cents on that?
Yeah, no, they summed it up, and it's disappointing because, you know, we saw him a little bit last year, and I liked what I saw on the ice. You know, he's a victim of his own circumstances, I guess, or a product of the environment, as they like to say. I mean, you know, the kid probably grew up, you know, they knew he was a rock star at like age 3. You know, he's had people kissing his ass his entire life. He's you know, just above a teenager. You know, he's had everything handed to him. He knew he was going pro. So he's got that chip on his shoulder. You know, I mean, yes, he needs to take some responsibility. I'm just giving him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. And as Steve knows, like, that's not something I really usually believe in, but, you know, a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. Cause he has had, you know, the red carpet laid out in front of him literally his entire life, and he's just now not a child anymore. But, yes, now he needs to man up. He's on his second agent, like you said. I'm assuming probably the first agent probably told him, like, you're going to screw it up. You know, you need to get your head out of your ass. You probably didn't like that and got rid of the guy. I don't know the circumstances, just, you know, a possible assumption there. Yeah, you'd think, like, he's got to realize, like, he's ruining his own career. Eventually, it will sink in. Maybe it won't. Who knows? You know, you see this happen to athletes across the board. Sometimes they just don't get any waste of talent, and it's a shame. Gallant obviously knew something. When he didn't make the opening night roster, this is why we brought Gallant in, because he's a disciplinarian. He's not going to reward based on, you know, draft status, contract, or salary or experience. He's going to reward based on earning it. And he obviously saw that. Maybe, you know, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. Maybe he blatantly saw the attitude, too, in training camp. And, you know, that's why we got Gallant in the first place. We needed a coach that was not David Quinn or AV. We need a coach who will identify that and reward and or punish. And, he, you know, that's why we brought him in. He saw it. didn't make the roster, and now, you know, will the real Kravtsov please stand up? And he has, and it's disappointing, but it is what it is. And now they got to figure out what to do about it.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I thought this was going to be a good problem with bringing a lot of these guys back at the end of last season, and then looking at the free agents we brought in. You know, I thought this was going to be healthy competition, and it's kind of backfired on Kravtsov's part. It really comes down to, are you willing to compete for time or not? And if he feels that he's deserving of time, you got to go out and earn your keeps, despite whatever roster you go on. I mean, you guys kind of pretty summed it up. It's just unfortunate it came to this, because we know what the makeup of this roster is based off the skill set of what we brought in. They want two-way guys. You got to play both ways. This is where I want to go back to RP on. But Lafreniere, like, he played excellent two-way hockey in Montreal on Saturday. And with Kravtsov, it's not just about scoring and handling the puck and all that other stuff. It's doing everything that is being asked out of the team. This is a team effort at this point. And it sucks that, because we talked about this, I think, a week ago. You know, the over the years, the first-round draft picks. I think you brought this up, Glenn, as far as you know, try to retain some sort of draft equity, especially in that first round. You know, everybody looked at Elias Anderson, but look at Filip Hedl's the one who's coming out of that in that draft class. Shoot, you can look at the Kravtsov draft and look who's shining in that out of that. It's Keandre Miller between the two.
Mm-hmm.
I know they play two different positions, but nobody's not going to give Keandre Miller is competing. And it shows. I mean, this is a good segue into what I saw in the third period in the overtime. They played so well, Keandre Miller and Adam Fox. They're running the point on the 3-on-3s. It shows the confidence that this coach and this organization has in those two young players. So Kravtsov, that could have been you. I'm not saying that's the point, but that could have been you as far as playing time. You are willing to compete. And it's just unfortunate, because this could have been a good problem that's gone bad one way because a guy not wanting to fight for minutes. I mean, that's what it comes down to, man. But, I want to go back to you on that, man. If there's anything else you'd like to add on that. And then also, that's the thing. Another thing, like the Miller, you know, Keandre Miller fighting. I know he makes mistakes, but he's done that last year. But he makes it up within game, man. He's attacking the net. You guys talked about Ryan Reeves as far as the lockdown line. I saw Sammy Blaze attacking the net in the overtime as if he's, as he's Jaromir Jagr, you know? So these guys are, you know, defending and they're attacking when the spot's needed. I know the shots on goal needed to come a little bit more during the regulation, but, man, I mean, they did pick their spots, I thought, pretty well, man. And then anything else you'd like to add, RP?
No, I, you know, the overtime was great. I think every game they're getting better, trying to take some less penalties, special teams, you know, everything's working, but everything's getting, you're seeing improvements from the first game to where we are now. It's very early in the season, but you want to see improvements. You don't want to be going in the opposite direction. I just think they got to keep doing what they're doing, you know, get through this, you know, strong COVID situation, and Kako's going to be out at least 7 days. I mean, he's not eligible to return until, I think, the day after the game next Saturday, if he is able to. We only know it's an upper body injury. And, you know, from there, you got to rely on your depth a little bit. That's why you have, you know, Morgan Barron up and McKay got called up. You know, guys like Rooney have been playing well. Keto was able to step up. I was kind of surprised that they put Gaudreau on the second line. I would have thought that would have been a perfect slot to put Gauthier. I was really wanted to see Beatles centering Panarin and Gauthier with all that speed and scoring. Mm-hmm. Not to take away from Gaudreau, but I thought Gaudreau would have been better on the third line. At the end of it all, he was mixing his lines up, and I'm sure you guys noticed. At one point, he put Panarin and Zibanejad together because none of them could get shots and they couldn't get open, and he thought that way it'd be harder for the team to defend both of those guys together instead of them on two separate lines. So I like the way Gallant gave lines time. And then when he gets down to crunch time, then he started mixing it up. It makes sense, especially if you're not feeling it on the bench. Maybe we're getting no shots. So that worked out. But at the end of the day, overall, the players are all starting to do what they're supposed to be doing, getting points, scoring goals, fighting a little bit. Well, not fighting. The Rangers have no fighting agents, but standing up for one another. I like the way the team is set up, and I'm really going to be looking forward to, you know, game 20, game 22, when they really start to bomb and gel together. I think it's going to be for a fun season.
A follow-up question for me before we go to Glenn. Let me ask you this, man. What are your thoughts as far as how the PK did in the first period in that Toronto, you know, 2-for-2 to get the power play away from the Toronto deadly lineup that they have? But also, what is the real PK? Is it how disgusting it was versus Washington, or is it more so what we've seen since that game? How confident are you with, you know, Gaudreau has been on the ice, Fox, guys like that?
I think it's what we've seen since the Washington game. I think Gallant's still feeling out who he really wants to use on the PK. He wants to use a lot of the guys, which is great, but you have to see in that 1-2-minute period, you know, who's the best guys to put out there. He has used Taco, he has used Lafreniere, he's using Kreider, all good. He's using the regular, you know, when Strom's in the lineup and all of that. So I just think it's a matter of him getting comfortable with four or six guys that he can use in that situation, and then they're going to start playing better. I think the PK over time always gets better. You start to get a feel of who's on the ice and where, and when them, you know, take that risk to skate with a puck and when just shoot it out. So I have a lot of confidence that the PK will improve again. The power play is another fiasco, but that has to do also right now with them just not shooting the puck. They don't shoot the puck 5-on-5, and they don't shoot the puck on the power play. Once they realize, like, you don't score, you score if you shoot, I think it'll get better all around for the team.
All right, cool. Hey, Glenn, anything else you'd like to add, man, as far as what you'd like to see in the Nashville game on Thursday, Ottawa over the weekend in Calgary, or just anything you wanted to see? What has impressed you the two games in Canada?
You know, I think what's impressed me is that they played 60-minute games. We haven't had lulls where, you know, the other teams are spending an inordinate amount of time in our end. I've seen a lot of skating. I've seen a lot of speed. I've seen guys that seem into the game. I like the way Gallant has been managing the lines. You know, he stated that he generally likes to keep his lines together, which is a pet peeve that we had the last couple of years with Quinn. And, you know, but when he does switch it up a little bit, when he moves guys around a little bit, at least to me, it makes sense what he's doing. And sometimes what Quinn did didn't make sense to me. It's like, why is this guy on that line now? And why is he moving things around? You know, I think with Gallant, a lot of the things that he does make sense. I like the way he's putting the young guys out there in critical moments. I mean, I know we've got a lot of young guys, so we may not have, you know, as much of a choice, but I like the way he's putting guys out there, giving them responsibility, letting them learn. You know, Ryan Reeves, like we were talking before, like Scott was saying, you know, there is more to him than fighting. I mean, I remember seeing him, you know, in St. Louis, and obviously he's got a history with Gallant in Vegas. I think I saw that generally he was averaging with Gallant in Vegas between like 10 and 12 minutes, somewhere around there. So it's obvious that he wasn't just putting him to bounce a couple of heads and then letting him sit for 10 minutes. He was getting ice time. And, I mean, he's reliable. He's not somebody you're going to expect a lot of points out of or, you know, a lot of offense. But, you know, he and Gaudreau and Blaze are doing what they were brought in to do. They're banging people. I mean, this team is hitting people. And it's great to see because that's not the norm for what we've seen for a lot of Ranger teams over the last few years. You know, I like the way they're sticking up for each other, even, you know, guys that, you know, not necessarily would or sticking their noses in when there's a little bit of a scuffle going on. And, you know, it seems like this team has kind of gelled to me as far as wanting to play for each other really quickly. You know, most of them are around from last year, but there have been some additions. But I like the way this team seems to have gelled. I like the way they're sticking up for each other. And I think that can only be a positive moving forward. You know, the one thing I would say about faceoffs, though, is I'm kind of surprised that he hasn't used Gaudreau to take faceoffs. Because I think Gaudreau had won 50% of faceoffs in his career, and he won 54% with Tampa last year. So I thought he might use him, even if he's playing wing on a line, to move in and take a face off and then go back. So I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen much of that yet, but, you know, maybe we will down the line.
I had a thought, but I'll come back to it. Scott, anything else you'd like to add? And feel free to take your time, and we'll get some extended final thoughts as well. So extra time for you, and then we'll go back to Glenn, and then RP will wrap up. I had a thought, but I forgot it. But go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, you know what I liked about the Montreal game is that, you know, the Rangers have a habit of playing to the level of whoever they're playing. You know, they can step it up against a good team. They, you know, even when they were bad, you know, and but they would play down. Now, this is clearly not the same Montreal team that went to the finals. This Montreal team's terrible. So the Rangers had no business losing that game, and they didn't. They won it in regulation, got 2 points. But what impressed me is that even though they were slightly the better team on paper, they it was more or less, you know, even for, as far as what I was seeing, you know, being there. And Igor, again, made some huge, huge saves. Not as many, he didn't have to make as many as in the Toronto game, but he made some huge saves. And the Rangers just kind of bided their time. They just kind of, you know, they had more shots, yeah, but they weren't all that impressive. They just kind of bided their time and then just jumped on it when it was there for the taking. You know, the Montreal scored. That place went berserk. I was nervous. And the Rangers scored less than a minute left on that two-on-one. So, you know, that speaks a lot to a young team, that they didn't get rattled. They weren't all that impressive, and they just kind of bided their time until it was time to pounce and got out of there with a regulation win. So, you know, that's the kind of thing, more so than the Toronto game, because let's face it, you know, Igor doesn't play, you know, like a Vezina candidate in that game. We lose that game 7-1, and we're just going to bitch about it. You know, the 2 points is a blessing. But the Montreal game showed me a little more of what this team is made of, a team that wasn't really flashy, could have lost that game, but stayed cool and collected and won that game when the time was right. And that's, you know, early – again, it's all early in the season. We're still trying to figure out, you know, what this team is. And we've all agreed that in all sorts of aspects across the board, we've been impressed, except for faceoffs. But that game – That game, that's what I like to see out of a team that didn't get rattled and didn't panic, you know, when Montreal had the crowd on their side and got out of there with a win. So that's that. And, of course, Igor gives me a lot of confidence here early on.
Hey, Captain America, that's my thought. I want to go back to you for final thoughts, and then we go to Glenn. But this is what I wanted to say. Kreider, you know, he had the little mini point streak. Right, and then it ended, you know, last night. But this is the thing where I think where we said last year where the veterans need to score. Like, I think that's what we were saying. Like, rookies kind of did their job early. You know, young guys did their job. Veterans didn't step up. And I think that's kind of why we got back in the, you know, in the pack in the standings behind Boston for it seemed like half the winner. The point I'm trying to say is Kreider got – a couple of deflection goals, got some points. And then when he did not score, that's when you saw Zibanejad get his goal and Panarin. So basically, I'm looking at least every game, one of those three in particular need at least 1 to 2 points a night so we could thrive. What do you look at as far as measurements as far as scoring between those three guys that we need those guys to score to win? And number two, Kreider, this goes back to Kreider. You know, we've seen Kreider go up and down. Like, you know, is he going to be able to continue the streak no matter who he pairs with this season with Gallant? What's your thoughts? I know you're the Kreider. Let's just, you know, we could call it a critique here. So I'm going to try to get your thoughts on that.
That's me, right? You're asking me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first off, I got to give him credit for those first three games. You know, there was that moment in the preseason game where he was, you know, where he dropped the gloves. So credit where it's due. He, you know, he started the season with his ass on fire, which is great to see. Whether he's auditioning for the C or whether Gallant, you know, just said, you know, I will put you on the fourth line. Who knows? But, you know, it was impressive to see. And, of course, I'm not going to have, you know, after three great games and you know, three goals, I'm not going to, you know, in the Toronto game without putting, you know, being on the board, I'm not going to say, well, there's a crowd. No, of course not. You know, one game, you know, who knows? You know, I'm hoping that Chris Kreider that we've been praying and hoping would arrive for 9 years, I'm hoping that's who it was in the third game. But, you know, like you said, Steve, when he didn't score, Panarin did. To manage Ed did. I mean, we saw that last year. Kreider had that great hot streak. And then when Panarin came back, he completely disappeared. So, you know, who knows? You know, again, just a lot of optimism in those first three games out of what we saw. I just hope that that's him and not the 9 years of Kreider where he's now going to take the next five games off. I don't know. All we can do is hope, but I do give credit for what I saw out of him the first few games. I just, you know, I hope this is finally, you know, 70-point Kreider that we know he can get 70 points if he shows up every night. We know that. I really, hopefully this is the year. All I know is a great start. Give him credit for that, and we'll see where it goes.
Captain America, welcome back home, man. Thank you very much, man, for your thoughts, man.
Thank you, buddy.
Glad you had a great – thank you for bringing the win, man. We needed that, man. We needed the 2 points. Glenn, your final thoughts, man, and then we go to RP.
Yeah, I mean, with Kreider, that was nice to see score in three straight games. I can't remember the last time we actually saw him show up for three straight games. It had been a while. But, you know, he has been noticeable. I'll give him that. You know, Zibanejad looks fine after the whole COVID thing last year and the slow start. I like that. If you remember, I think he split the defense. I don't remember who was in Montreal, I think it was. He didn't score, but split the defense and got kind of a semi-breakaway. So his speed looks there. So that should help. I mean, I'll give Kreider, you know, a little bit of time having to get used to playing on the off wing. They tried that before and it didn't really work. So, you know, we'll see if it can work this time. I mean, on a line with Zibanejad and Lafreniere, I mean, if he can't get 70 points this year, then it's never going to happen. But, you know, I'll give him credit. I mean, he's one of the best in the league at deflecting shots and standing in there and knowing right when to, you know, kind of stand off to the side and get in there. He's got that down. You know, he can be a real, real asset for this team if, you know, he can be a little more consistent than he's been in the past. And then the last thing I want to do, I want to touch on Montreal since Scott was there over the weekend. My time of going up there, and I went up countless times, was kind of early 80s to mid-90s. And so most of the games that I saw, I don't think I saw a game at the Bell Center. I might have seen one, but I think I've seen most of them at the Forum. And actually always used to stay at the Chateau Champlain, which is right across from where the Bell Center is now. But the fans, as I remember, they weren't rowdy. You didn't feel like you were in any kind of danger. That sounds like it's the same. But one thing I do remember was that they would speak loud enough in French and look at you, so you knew that they were talking about you, but you know, they were talking in French, so there was nothing you could really take exception to and you know, get in trouble with. But they were kind of and I agree, they're Hab fans, and they could be a little snooty, it's a great atmosphere up there. And one other thing I was going to say is I between periods or after the game in Montreal, Steve Valiquette had mentioned what a great visiting city Montreal is, and the nightlife, and you can have a tendency to stay out a little bit too late and everything. And I'm glad he kept it PG, and I'll keep it PG. But yeah, there were some great bars along that. I think it was Peel Street and McKay, and up and down those streets. If you guys have been up there, And I remember we also ran into Rangers there after the game a few nights. I remember one night hanging out with Darren Langdon, if you guys remember him in that era, like
sure.
The Peter Nedved era. Langdon, yeah. I mean, you know, unfortunately, guys like Leach and Mess never showed up, but you know, we got the Darren Langdons and Peter Nedveds. But Langdon was a nice guy, and I remember I was hanging out with him for a good portion of the night and a bunch of the Rangers in some of these bars. I doubt they do that anymore, but, you know, to follow up on what Scott was saying about Montreal, great town, probably one of my favorite North American cities besides New York since I live so close. So I'm
sure.
Glad he had a great time
up
there. Glad he got us 2 points.
Yep. Okay, let me just add one more thing I meant to say in my my closing statement there. Did anybody notice Lafreniere's dad? Anybody see that footage when he scored?
Yeah.
Very, very touching. You know, because he was a rookie last year, but because of COVID and he couldn't cross the border, that was his first NHL game. That was the first game that he saw his son in there in Montreal, and he scored the game winner. And I don't know if there's a video clip, but there's a still photo of him just jumping in the air with this look on his face, which is a very, very touching photo. Getting to see his little boy score there, and it's the first time that he's seen him play in there in the Bell Center. So you know, that's the hometown arena for them. So great, great moment there.
Yep, it was.
Absolutely, man. All right, cool. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Scott. RP, final thoughts.
You know, it's been an interesting couple of games. I like the way a lot of the guys have come out flying. You know, it's a new coaching staff, a little bit different of a system. Just having a different voice is always a little unusual on the bench. I love the way Shesterkin's come out and performed. Like I said before, the top players are performing. You know, Zibanejad had a goal and assist in the Toronto game, and Panarin got his first goal, and Kreider's been scoring. So let's just hope they keep building up on it, you know, a game at a time, and don't get too overwhelmed. I think Nils Lundqvist is getting a little bit more comfortable from his first game to now, which is a good thing to see. And we're just, you know, a game at a time, keep playing hard, and I think good things are going to come from this team.
Rangers Town, give RP some slack, man. I mean, let him write what he writes, man. Overreaction too early on.
Look, at least they're reading the story, so, you know, it could be worse.
True.
It's all good. That's what hockey's all about.
I haven't been to Montreal in a minute. Now, I went back in the mid-2000s. I didn't go to the Bell Center, but I remember those Ranger teams where Jagr and Nylander was on those teams, and we were putting up a lot of points in that mid-2000s team. I remember partying a lot in Montreal back in those days.
Oh, yeah.
The Latin Quarter. I remember that vividly, man. I still don't remember how I got back to the hotel that night. But anyway, that's a story for another day, man. Old Canada, we'll be back next Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Three more games. We'll hopefully get at least four points out of six. Maybe another win on this road trip, we call it out, and then go back home versus the Flames on Monday. RP, Scott, Glenn, myself, Steve, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and should follow Ranger Proud on Twitter and the Facebook fan page, Empire Sports Media Forever, Blue Shirts. Give a shout out to Scott if you see him on the book, and same thing with Glenn. Sangre also, ladies and gentlemen. Bleed blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?